If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps me out a lot. Cheers.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Novel Analyst Podcast. My name's Jed Hearn, author of the fantasy books Across the Broken Stars, which came out only a couple of weeks ago, and Fires of the Dead. On this podcast, it is my job to analyze my favorite books to help you become a better writer. Today's episode is titled Never Die by Rob J. Hayes, choreographing excellent ensemble casts. And as always, there will be spoilers ahead for Never Die, so if you haven't read the book, go read it and then come back to listen to this episode. Never Die is a East Asian-inspired fantasy book about a young boy who is on a mission from a god of death. He is tasked with destroying this corrupt emperor who is ruling the lands, and in order to do so, he must go around the country collecting heroes and bringing them into his cause. The only problem, though, is that in order for these heroes to serve him, he must first kill them and then bring them back from the dead. So, Never Die has a really fantastic ensemble cast, which is what I want to talk about in this book. There are five principal main characters who form this, this crew that the young boy who's on a mission from the God of Death. There's five of them in this cast that work together to, you know, go on their mission of attacking this emperor who is corrupt and who the young boy is trying to kill. And the story is split into their various point of views. So the first chapter, for instance, is from one of them, and then other chapters are from the other character's point of views. And you see a really interesting thing happening with this. Because while these kind of ensemble casts are not particularly new in fantasy, in fact, they're very common, the way that Hayes used them in this book was, I think, quite remarkable and a really good example of how to do this kind of multi-point of view characters all working together as a motley crew thing effectively. Each character feels unique, each character feels like they are important for the story, and each character really adds to the whole plot as a whole. So while there are a lot of great elements in Never Die that I really, really enjoyed, in particular the kind of magic system where it was sort of this cool combination between a soft magic of not really being explained and a hard magic of at the same time still feeling like it had a very distinct set of rules to it. That was one thing I really enjoyed that I could have probably done a whole episode about as well. I love the tone of this as well. It was very grimdark, very Joe Abercrombie, and I love that kind of stuff. It's what I write. It's what I really enjoy. But the thing I want to focus on is this idea of an ensemble cast and how you can create a really fascinating and compelling ensemble cast in your own stories. So I've broken this down into four techniques that Hayes used for this. Number one, variants. Number two, considering first impressions. Number three, prioritizing deep characterization over quirks. And number four, remembering that people are probably going to side with your first point of view character. So let's dive into each of these techniques to find out how Hayes created such an excellent ensemble cast in Never Die. So number one, variance. The beauty of having multiple point of views in your story is that it gives readers multiple points of entry into your world. Maybe they don't click with the first character whose point of view is being in the novel. Maybe they don't click with the second. But perhaps there's something about the third character which really lets the reader relate to them effectively and really lets the reader get into the story world. This is the huge benefit of having different points of entry by having different characters who are interacting with the world in varying ways. And in order to have this variance so that characters can be relatable to different people, it's very important to make sure you're not doubling up. I think the biggest issue that gets done with some ensemble casts is when there are two characters who are basically the same. If you can cut a character out of the book, then they probably should be cut out of the book. You want each of them to feel unique, and you want each of them to have their own specific impact on the story. With the format and the structure of Never Die in particular, the book would really break down if you took out one or two of the main characters from the central cast. So to kind of show you the level of variance that is displayed within the cast of characters who are recruited by the boy for his mission in Never Die, I'm going to run through each of the characters really quickly. The first character we are introduced to is Itami Cho, also known as the Whispering Blade. So, like I mentioned in the introduction, this book is heavily inspired by kind of East Asian mythology, and I really enjoyed this distinctively different fantasy book. A lot of fantasy books, as you're probably aware, kind of tend to be set in this medieval European world, which can be fun, but it's also lovely to see stuff set in distinctive, different, and original worlds. So, Whispering Blade is a sort of samurai analog. She has the ability to focus her ki into a... That's chi, isn't it? Focus her chi into a razor-sharp edge for her blade that allows it to cut through anything. And before I go into the other characters, I should say that this is a really great way that they all get distinguished. Each of them has a different technique, or to put it in more sort of like common vernacular, superpower, that allows them to basically use a unique form of magic to, you know, solve conflicts throughout the book. The next character is Ian, who is a young boy, the one who is being tasked by this god of death to bring together this disparate band of heroes by first killing them and then bringing them back to life so that they are bound to his service. He is very different to Itami Cho. Unlike her, who is like this sort of experienced warrior woman, he is just this young little boy who definitely seems to be a kind of old soul and is almost this very scary character because he seems far wiser and more terrifying than his years. The next character is Zihao, also known as the Emerald Wind. He is a bandit, and his technique, or his, you know, superpowered ability, is basically teleportation, but it's a really interesting form of teleportation where he sort of steps through the world and he leaves an image of himself behind that then just scatters in the breeze. It's not really described in full detail, or at least maybe I've forgotten if it was, how his image looks, but for me I kind of just weirdly imagined it like scattering into petals, so I don't know where that came from, but either way it was a cool image and I think that it made him very distinct as a character. So again, he's very different to Whispering Blade, the first person I mentioned, and he's very different to the young boy. His personality is more selfish than both of those, and he's definitely more cowardly than both of them. The next character is Chen Lu, also known as Iron Gut, and he's probably my favorite character from the book. He's basically this massively fat guy who you first meet just basically like eating a ton of food and drinking wine, and you think, well, this person would not stand a chance against the other characters who are trying to kill him. And then it's revealed that he has impervious iron skin, forged from years of living as a street urchin and basically eating whatever he could find on the streets. And this has given him his aforementioned iron gut, which basically is impenetrable skin and a whole lot of strength. The next character is Bingwei Ma, who is this master of open-handed wushu, which is a kind of form of martial arts that doesn't use any weapons. Unlike the other characters, well, actually, perhaps more like Whispering Blade, he is a very honorable person with a strict moral code. He doesn't kill. And what you can see within these first five characters, is that there is a lot of distinction along various axes of characterization. The last character, again, very distinctive. Roy Astara, also known as Death's Echo, is a leper who wears bandages around himself to stop his body crumbling away, and unlike the other characters who are, you know, up close and personal with their combat, he uses a rifle to shoot and assassinate enemies from a distance. So that's technique number one, variance. Having a strong amount of difference and diversity between the characters in your cast will, first of all, help keep them distinctive in readers' minds, which is really important because you don't want them getting confused. And also it will allow there to be multiple points of empathy and multiple areas that your reader can enter into the world. And Also, the thing that I love about fantasy worlds is just exploring a new place. And when you have all these different people, it allows you to explore different aspects of that place and allows you to have different kind of backstories and different ways of seeing the world. So, number two, first impressions matter. When you've got a central cast of five characters and your book is not massively long for a fantasy book, I think Never Die runs in at about 300 pages, it's so important to be concise with your characterization. What does that mean? Well, it means that first impressions are really critical. K.M. Weiland, who is the author of a fantastic bunch of writing advice books, many of which have really helped me as an author, describes this idea of first impressions as the characteristic moment. The characteristic moment is the ideally first moment when you meet a new character and they are introduced in such a way that allows you to understand their essence. So, for example, in Never Die, Zihao, the Emerald Wind? His name gets called sort of different versions of that nickname throughout it. But anyway, Emerald Breeze, that's it. That's it, because he gets called Green Wind by another character. Okay, you can stop shouting at me now. He is first introduced as being brought back to life amongst a huge body of dead bandits, probably 100 different dead bandits or whatever, all scattered on the banks of this river. His rings have been pulled off his fingers by his fellow bandits who have basically looted his dead body. And he sees the young boy who has brought him back, and he just immediately runs away, basically. What's really excellent about this characteristic moment is that it tells us so much about who he is as a person, about who he was as a person before the story begins. It tells us that the Emerald Breeze did not have any particularly close friends, because the quote-unquote friends he had looted his corpse as soon as he was dead, and it also tells us that he is a fundamentally cowardly person at the beginning of the book, willing to run away rather than trying to face a fight. Even his very superpowered ability, that ability to teleport through the world, is emblematic of this trait of his, this sort of cowardly desire to avoid conflict. So the other characters are introduced in similarly charismatic moments. Characteristic moments. Ah, my voice is going all over the place here. And what this really serves to do is to instantly create a mental picture of that person in our minds. Now, this doesn't mean that your characteristic moment has to show readers the way that your character will always be. In fact, a lot of the characteristic moments that you see in Never Die are subverted by the end of the book. So for instance, the Emerald Breeze is first introduced as being, you know, reanimated from death and then running away from the conflict. And by the end of the book, he's the one who's charging and leading the army into the final climactic battle. The key point with this idea of making sure that first impressions matter, though, is that readers will give a disproportionate amount of value and weight to the way that they first interact with a character. So really think deeply about how you want to use that first impression, because it's sort of an ability where your characterization tokens will get cashed in for three or four times their value compared to later in the book, where a similarly interesting characteristic moment probably won't have the same impact because you're putting it up against all this other data that readers have collected on the character so far. Point number three on how to make really interesting ensemble casts is to prioritize deep characterization over quirks. One of the things that I used to do when I was earlier on in my writing is that I wouldn't really have any idea how to make side characters interesting. So I would think, okay then, I need to give them quirks. For example, just this is a weird, embarrassing example, but I'll say it anyway. With my very first novel, The Aeon Academy, which was a sort of Harry Potter style school but for superheroes story about a young orphan. It was pretty derivative, but it was a fun story to write and it got me started. And it hasn't been published and it probably never will. But in that, I decided to just randomly flesh out this side character by making him really, really, really obsessed with this particular coffee chain. And it was super wacky and like super weird, and it definitely made him distinctive, but I don't really know if it made him good. So it's so tempting when you have a lot of characters to give them these little quirks to make them, you know, stand out in readers' minds. To some extent, this is really important. It's useful to say, oh, this is the character who carries around a bright yellow parasol to protect him from the sun. That is useful for forming a mental picture in our minds and sort of anchoring readers to understand who this person is. But you've got to use these surface level quirks to get to deep level characterization. At the end of the day, it's this deep characterization that readers will walk away from the book remembering and loving. They're not going to walk away from the book remembering necessarily the quirks. So for example, in Never Die, Iron Gut Chen, who is that big guy I was mentioning earlier, massively fat, but is also got impervious skin and, you know, like super strong and basically has a lot of interesting contradictions going to him, which was why he was my favorite character, is also very funny and just absolutely takes the mickey out of the other characters in the book as well. He has this quirk where, you know, he eats a lot and he's first introduced, you know, basically drinking wine from this massive, I've forgotten the word for this, this massive barrel that's probably, you know, 30 or 40 liters big. And he even carries this barrel around with him on the quest. He's sort of got the most random quirks. He carries this bright yellow parasol around with one hand, and then with the other arm, he keeps a big barrel of wine that he just constantly drinks from as the characters walk across the lands. So that's a quirk. But it leads to this great moment later in the book where you find out that the reason why he has this impervious iron skin, drawing from this idea of him having an iron gut, is because as a child he was an incredibly poor orphan on a city's streets, and the only thing he had to eat was trash. Sometimes he had to fight rats to eat other dead rats, and eating all of this horrendous food made him so sick, so repeatedly, that eventually he just formed an iron constitution, and this sort of bled out through the magic system in the world to enable him to have this iron impenetrable skin. And while this is not only a fascinating explanation for his powers, it also kind of tells you that this guy who is like very jolly and jovial has come from a bit of a rough upbringing, and it made you feel a lot more for who he was as a character. So that's a great example of how you can take a quirk and then feed it into part of a character's backstory. So for instance, perhaps what I could have done with that character in the Aeon Academy who was really obsessed with this coffee chain is, this is maybe a cliched example, but perhaps the coffee was the same brand that his father always used to get, and his father's dead, and this is sort of his way of remembering him. So that is a really cliched example, but it instantly kind of makes it 10 times better than just, oh, I'm really obsessed with this coffee. So when you are using quirks, and by all means you should be using quirks to, you know, give readers instant stereotypical assessments of characters that you can then play off, use those quirks as a way to lead to something deep and profound and interesting and compelling about those characters. My final point out of the 4 points in how to make excellent ensemble casts is to remember that even if you are even, people are probably going to have the maximum amount of connection to the first. So in this book, I haven't actually counted this, so I might be wrong, but the point of view seemed to be split pretty evenly between those 5 main characters, between Whispering Blade, the Emerald Breeze, who else? Iron Gut Chen, Bing Wei Ma, and Roy Astara, the Death's Echo, that's the last person. Yeah, those are 5 people, even though I gave more than 5 names. Some people I gave their actual names and then their kind of nicknames. But anyway, the point of views are split fairly evenly between all of these characters. We probably get to spend roughly the same amount of time in all of their shoes, but despite that, it definitely feels like Whispering Blade's story to me. And the reason for that is because that's the point of view we start in. Like I mentioned back in point number 2, first impressions really matter. You know, there's a whole bunch of cliches that you're not supposed to follow that readers follow to the nth degree. You know, never judge a book by its cover. I judge the heck out of covers. I even paid extra the other day so that I could get a version of Dune with a slightly nicer cover. You know, don't judge people based on first impressions. It certainly happens here. And what I'm trying to get at with this point is that even if you have, you know, roughly even amounts of time spent in each of the characters' point of view, readers are naturally going to tend towards thinking that the first character you introduce is sort of the main character. You know, you can look at this, for instance, in The Witcher, which I've been watching on Netflix. It's really good. I'm only 4 episodes into the first season, so I know that's kind of behind the boat on this one, but don't spoil it for me. Even though there are multiple characters in that, it feels very much like Geralt's story, who is the first character that you interact with in that. And likewise, in Never Die, even though you're in all of the different people's point of view, it feels to me like it's Whispering Blade's story, even though I know that's just the kind of first impression bias of her point of view being the first in the book. The reason why I bring this up, though, is that, like it or not, this is a reality that you're going to have to deal with in your writing. So make sure that whoever the first character you're introducing to readers is a compelling character. And I would probably go so far to say, you know, ideally make them the best, because they're probably, that's the point where most readers will decide whether to continue or not. If you start with one of your lackluster characters, then, I mean, you want all your characters to be great, but you want to definitely start with probably your best character, because then it's going to encourage readers to keep going and to read the rest of your book. So those are the 4 points in how to choreograph excellent ensemble casts. I'll go through them again. Number one was variance, making sure that you have lots of diversity between your cast of characters so that there's multiple points of entry into the story and so that they all have to be there in a meaningful way. You don't want to double up. Number two, first impressions matter. Introduce your characters in the key characteristic moment that develops them in our minds and give us a fairly firm picture of who they are as people. Number three, prioritize deep characterization over quirks. If you are going to use quirks, which you probably should, use them as a pathway to lead towards deep characterization. And lastly, number four, even if you're even-handed in how you deal out point of views to characters, people are probably going to have a bias for the first. Never Die is perhaps one of the best ensemble stories I've read in a long time. I learned a lot from this book, and to sum up and wrap up this episode, I think the thing that I really enjoyed about it the most, which isn't really related to what I've talked about so far, but I kind of want to say it anyway, is I just really loved the mythos that infused this story. There was this sense of deep spirituality to the way that the characters sort of interacted with their magic systems, and there were a lot of great philosophical moments that really made the story shine for me. This won't be the last Rob Haynes book that I read, and I hope that you'll check out Never Die if you haven't already. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to the Novel Analyst Podcast. Like I mentioned in the introduction, I am the author of Across the Broken Stars, a fantasy book that came out only a couple of weeks ago. If you want to listen to me read the first chapter from that for free, you can just scroll down in this podcast to the episode titled something along the lines of Across the Broken Stars, Chapter 1. I will also put a link to that in the show notes. And you can listen to me read the whole first chapter for free. If you're not familiar with what the book's about, it is a space fantasy adventure about a cowardly war deserter who seeks redemption by helping a young fugitive search for a mythical safe haven that may or may not exist. And the whole story is set in this world where people float on discs that, where people live on discs that float in space. So if you enjoyed the kind of unique world building in Never Die, I think you'll really enjoy the world building in Across the Broken Stars. And you can listen to me read that whole first chapter for free by just scrolling down to the Across the Broken Stars sample chapter episode of the Novel Analyst Podcast. Link to that also in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening. Now go and write extraordinary stories. I'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.